This is Authors Alcove, where writers learn from writers. Readers get the inside scoop, and everyone learns something. An episode comes out every Wednesday where writers share their latest work, every other Tuesday where us writers get taught by such experts as editors, book cover artists, and marketing execs, and beyond. So grab a cup of coffee, and let's dive into our next book. Hi, welcome to Authors Alcove. I am your host, Agnes Wolf. Today, I am super excited because it is our very first book club, and we are going to be talking about the bestseller, Tom Lake by Ann Patchett. And here's the book cover right here, right there. Anyway, so I have three other hosts. They're my guest hosts. And a lot of them should be following me throughout this coming year as we record. So we are going to be talking first, starting out by saying why we think that Tom Lake became a bestseller, and then whether or not we thought it should become a bestseller or not. And then we're just going to go through some basic book club questions. But first, before we get started, I want to go through our panelists so that way we can just introduce each of ourselves and get to know one another. So our first one is Marie Manning.
My name is Marie Manning. I am working currently on three different books. And so hopefully I'll get to be part of the book club eventually. But my relationship with reading started very, very early. It started out as my way to escape and my way to cope. And then it turned into this lifelong love of reading. My favorite stuff is actually history books written like novels. That's my favorite genre. Love it. But I love historical fiction, and I dabble in just about everything. I'll try anything once, right? So I'm very excited to be part of this, Angie. I'm Agnes. Thank you so much for inviting us today.
I go by Angie. It works. Okay, Rebecca?
I'm Rebecca. I started publishing novels last year. I write urban romanticy under the pen name Rebecca Maeve Hartwell. And I am also a professional developmental editor specializing in my favorite genres to read, which are predictably fantasy, romance, and historical fiction. I grew up reading voraciously. I probably spent more time in the library than any other public building under the planet. And I've done theater, I've written plays, I've done live action role play. I have always been super into storytelling in all of its forms. I particularly love vocal storytelling, so that's definitely comes through in my writing a little bit. And I love it when I get to edit and read pieces that also sort of reflect that really traditional style while bringing in completely new modern energies and ideas into it.
What about you, Amber?
Hi, my name is Amber Letters. I think I'm the only one that's not a writer, but that makes me a reader and an audience member. So maybe that's good. I was a teacher for 16 years. I taught everything from middle school to the master's level in ELA, writing, reading. But again, my worst was creative writing. I'm very good at the critical writing, the poetry, that kind of stuff. I just was always the worst, but an avid reader. I love reading. What the first time I read To Kill a Mockingbird, I know that's so cliche, but it just did it for me. When I moved back to Pittsburgh, I started a book club, but it was all like female and my family members and friends of family. We got a little complacent, but we were about 4 years, and then we decided to become co-ed. And that really shifted the books that we read and the conversations that we had. Yeah. So that's, we'll have to talk about that sometimes. So that's where we are right now. We're the Steel City Readers because we're in Pittsburgh. But again, I was a teacher for 16 years. My dad unfortunately passed away from ALS in 2021. So now I work for the ALS Association. So my reading is really an escape because I work in such a difficult field. So, you know, you guys were talking about your favorite genres. Mine always shifts, you know, All the Light We Cannot See, the historical fiction. I loved that so much, but you know, I did just read The Lessons in Chemistry, which was a little fluff for me because I do love the In Cold Blood. So I go all over the place, and I am really happy and honored to be here and to be amongst authors. I really think that's an amazing place to be. So thank you for having me.
And hopefully Very soon, I will be getting this book edited by my favorite editor. She is somewhere like right there. And she's been on my podcast before, different two episodes. So definitely check those out. One where she's talking about her book, Heart of Flame. The other where she's talking about her Heartbound editing services. So definitely check her out if you're a writer, want to know more, or if you're just a fantasy reader who loves a little bit of spice. She writes really great books. So now we're going to get into the book, Tom Lake. So first I'm going to ask a quick yes or no question. We're going to start, go to from Dawn, Rebecca, Amber. You just say yes or no, no explanation with a simple yes or no, giving no dictation. We can do that at the end. And do you think, so for the very first question is, do you think this book deserves the popularity and accolades it has gotten? Dawn?
Nope. I don't.
Rebecca?
Not really.
Amber?
I don't. No.
So my answer is no as well. So what about this book do you think made it popular? Anybody can go.
I think her descriptions are fantastic. The way she describes people. She's very, very descriptive. It's still not enough to redeem the book in my mind, but I think that that is why it got so many accolades. Like describing the lady who did her hair in California, a very blonde lady with no eyebrows. Like she had to have known somebody who looked like that and then describe it very, very expertly. So I think that's why.
So I personally think, I'm sorry, go ahead, Rebecca, I'll go last. We can even just do it that way. So I'll go last.
All right. Yeah, I think it was a few things. It is by far the best immersive realism I have ever read. Like reading through it, and it doesn't hurt that I personally relate to a lot of the things in that, like doing theater and living on a ranch and a bunch of other things. But it was fantastic realism. It definitely hit a zeitgeist. It's the first piece of fiction that I've read that not only acknowledges the pandemic, but actually uses it as that framing device for the story being told into the past. And I think it's a nice little palate cleanser. Like if you've been reading some big emotional or darker fiction, maybe you need something that's just for the fluff, that's just for the experience, that doesn't make you go deep or reach or anything. It's just a palate cleanser. So there's definitely things that it absolutely nailed, and I can understand why people liked it.
I think palate cleanser is the exact word I was looking for. Like I went to my Goodreads and I'm literally funneling the darker books. Like I need something that's going to like grab me and shake me because that was fluff to me. I think it received its accolades, and I'm a researcher because The Dutch House was up for a Pulitzer Prize. So I think that's a big reason it got the accolades it did. I think because Meryl Streep narrated it, which I did not listen. I read. I think her name, I mean, don't get me wrong. I agree. I would have to put it under fluff. And I also relate, my husband's from Petoskey, Michigan on a farm. I was a theater girl, but it was like a very G-rated Daisy Jones and the Six. It never really like scratched below the surface. I was waiting and there was, and please. She did get an abortion, right? Like yes. That's what we all, because I know there was that, oh, what did she get an abortion? Or was it alluding to something else? That was the only kind of like, and I'm really an ooh kind of reader. So it was definitely, but I love that. It was a palate cleanser. I'm ready to read something that shakes me to the core next. So
I'm noticing that all three of us all grew up on farms and we're all theater girls.
I didn't grow up on a farm, but my husband did. So I'll count.
Oh, okay. All right. Yes. So I love
the world. But yet, Marie, we still didn't love it. Like, even though we related, we still didn't love it.
Not at all.
Right.
She was not kind to theater people at the beginning of the book at all. She was really unkind. And if I had just, Agnes, I love you. Because I finished the book. If it had been me choosing that book, I would have been like, oh, how could she say this about, I'm a theater person. She's really mean to theater people. And I would have put it down and never picked it up again. That's what would have happened.
So I still haven't said why I think it became popular. And I have to admit that I think a lot of the reason why it became popular is because she's a pretty popular author. But again, I did not really like it. So now I want to go into why you felt it did not deserve the accolades and popularity that it has gotten.
I think because Laura is just not a very likable character. She just really isn't. She, very early in the book, she betrays her best friend and sleeps with her best friend's boyfriend. And I, for me, it's just like, I kept waiting for something to redeem her. And there was just nothing. I just, and every time that I'd be like, okay, I couldn't like her any less, she'd do something else and I would like her less. I'd be like, I don't think she's a likable character.
So that's part of it for me. The way that I like, so I read things multiple times. That's just my pattern being a dev editor. So I read it twice and listened to the audiobook once. And I think the biggest issue that I could pull out was that I felt like the story was working very hard to make sure that I never got invested in anything or anyone. Yeah. Like I couldn't get invested in the Cherry Orchard timeline because it was just the framing device. And I couldn't get invested in the Tom Lake storyline because I knew because of the framing device that it doesn't pay off with the happily ever after. It doesn't pay off with fame. It doesn't pay off with any of the things that that story by itself would be promising as far as genre goes. I couldn't get invested in Laura because, like you said, she's not very likable. And I think the biggest reason for that for me was that she wasn't acting as a protagonist. She wasn't making big choices and enacting those choices to have impact on her arena. She was just this passive person who kept letting big things happen to her, but she never stepped up into her agency. So she never felt like that connectable protagonist to me. And then the primary, you know, love interest wasn't, I'm not going to curse because this is a podcast. I didn't like him. And the last encounter that she describes, like the one that she's going to keep secret from the people she's telling the story to, that one made me really hate him. Like, it just brought to the surface that he'd never been a good person. He'd never been a good character. And she'd let him walk all over her the entire time. So yeah, it felt like every different element that was going on was just making sure that I couldn't get invested in the other elements that were going on, because I'd start to, and then I'd get sidetracked, and I'd start to, and I'd get sidetracked. So that's my primary reason why I just could not like it.
I think mine's a combination of both of yours. So I come from an Italian family. We share everything. So if my brothers and I and my parents, especially, I'm just going to be honest, having a parent that died from a disease that, you know, was elongated and we had a lot of time to learn about my dad and he would sit and talk to us. I don't think that is a story that he would share. That was a little G-rated again, and not saying I'm an R-rated type of gal, but you know, I also am. It just never broke the mold. It was very cookie cutter for me. There was no part of the story where I felt like she was really giving herself or teaching her daughters that, yes, you can overcome. What was so bad about Duke? I mean, he was just a guy that did what he could to be, don't get me wrong, he was a bad character too, but there was just never a part of the story where I felt I learned a life lesson. I was like, yes, I'm going to overcome this too. It was, again, very cookie cutter. It just never got to a part where it was a very easy read. There were maybe two or three words that I couldn't pronounce and I had to like reread a couple times. The writing was great. I don't know. It just, it never, for what it wanted to do. And again, I read articles after the New York Times. I actually looked up, why are people enjoying this book? And for the reasons, I really did, because that's the teacher in me. Because I was thinking, I have to have something to come in here. What if everybody loves it but me? And for the reasons they loved it, I didn't. It wasn't this profound, earth-shattering change of life theme that she was trying to teach her daughters. And the poor dad, like, that poor guy. But anyway, I'm sure we'll talk about that later. So for me, it was trying to hit all these points. And it never got there. It never resonated. It just...
For me, I think one of the biggest things was that I didn't really like the character herself. It was like, as soon as she hurt her best friend, that just bothered me. And there was really no like redemption from that anywhere in the book. I just had trouble connecting with her after that point. And if there's no redemption after, then I just struggle to connect with the main character. And I think for me, that was the biggest thing. And also, I don't feel like she really, I guess there is some ways that she has evolved as a character, but overall, I don't feel like she really evolved as a character throughout the book. But I didn't really feel like it was portrayed well either. So I guess what I was really hoping for was to have more growth as a character. That's what I like to see. Because I'm a very character-driven reader. Like, if it has a good character, then I will love the book. So I get, that's probably what it is for me.
Wasn't dynamic. She stayed the same through the whole book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's never like what goes around comes around. She never said, hey, I did this to my friend. This happened to me. Here's the growing. Here's the learning point of the story. Yeah, just, I don't know.
Yeah, there was only one sentence that said, now I understood how Veronica felt. And that's it. She doesn't say anything else. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it took you 9 years to figure out that what you did to Veronica was awful. It took you nine, like, you never had that moment before you crawled in the back seat of this car with him that, hey, this might hurt this person I supposedly
love. Or, hey, even like you did this to get ahead. Well, maybe Duke did the same thing. There's so many times she could have opened her eyes and realized, and it never happened.
Never. And it's, and she lies to everybody through the whole thing. Just
and part of why that particular thing bugs me is I'm the kind of person who always reaches for genre to kind of try to map, like, okay, well, where did it miss a beat? Where did it veer off track? And this book doesn't hit romance because she has some of them with Duke and she has almost none of them with Joe. And it doesn't hit action, it doesn't hit historical, it doesn't hit. But that particular point you were just making where she doesn't mature is not even a maturation plot, which either that or a worldview plot, like genre plot, is mostly what I would expect to see in literary, and it doesn't do it.
Not at all.
And a character development. I felt like the daughters, I felt like Emily was very underdeveloped. I didn't understand this manic, this manic obsession with being Duke's daughter. I kind of did, but I feel like the daughters are so underdeveloped. I would have loved to learn a little bit more about their story, much more than I would like to know some. Sorry, I feel like I'm jumping ahead, but you're right. So when you're talking about genre, like coming of age, but who came of age? I have no idea.
And I was so ready for her daughter, Emily, to have some great twist at the end. And she started building up to a twist at the end and then just pulled it out from under my feet. And I was just like, really?
Because she said she doesn't want kids, Emily, but then the end is all about having kids and so many, they'll all be buried there, but Emily doesn't want kids. I'm so, that ending was very misconstrued to me. That was a very land the plane, but did you?
Yeah. And the whole thing about Emily not having kids just bogged it down. It did absolutely nothing for the book.
So I think it did. I think that that was the closest thing that book was going to get to a midpoint shift. I think that it served the sole purpose of having the mom and dad and the three girls and the fiance have a little moment of, oh no, the world isn't all peaches and roses. And like, I get it that you kind of want to have some sort of emotional up and down. And I like that it was realistic. I know lots of people in my own life who share that sort of mindset. And I like that it was portrayed, but yeah, it didn't go anywhere. It didn't.
Exactly.
It didn't do anything. It didn't have payoff. It didn't have resolution. And it could have so beautifully if it had turned out that, you know, she was the daughter of this other person, but it was so clearly established that she wasn't that it didn't really work for me.
I wish that part where it was so clear that she did get an abortion, I wish that they would have maybe change the writing a little bit so we really would have thought, well, did she just go to the doctor to get checked or do you know what I mean? If that would have really been a great twist, that, because I reread it a couple times, like, oh, maybe I'm jumping ahead, but yeah,
they would have had to change other things too, because on my second read I was watching for them. I'm like, did she leave that door open for doubt? No, there were quite a few clues peppered throughout the story that it's definitely not that.
Mm-hmm. Or I was thinking maybe she lied. She didn't see the dad. And then she saw the dad right after maybe she met up with him again after she left the hospital. when that'll happen. I know that's just me wanting the book. That's the writer in me, ladies. The writer in me would have changed the end of the book.
Maybe we'll make a writer out of you before this is all over anyway.
I can't wait.
That's a valid critique. Like, do I care about this as a reader? Do I care about this as this is how I would have written it? But as an editor, I'm very careful not to project what I would have done with a story onto it. I try to just go through and go, okay, you set this up. You set this up in your work that you handed me and then didn't do what you're supposed to do in story with it. So just to be clear, that's where I'm coming from on this.
The closest thing to a twist I felt in the book was the fact that Joe was her husband. Yeah. That kind of like, I went, oh, okay, now I get it. Now it all makes sense. But it took me, but I was like, okay, yeah, now it makes sense because he was so nice to her, but they never say what his first name is. And then, but that was the closest thing that I saw to a twist.
I actually picked up that Nelson was Joe very early on. So for me, that wasn't really even a twist. And then when I read it a second time, one of the book club questions that I had come across was, is Emily Joe's daughter, or is it really Duke's? And when I read it the second time, I realized there's no way that it would have been Duke's daughter. It was very clear that she had had an abortion.
It's not even just the statement that it was abortion. There's other like timing details peppered through. Like she didn't find out she was pregnant with Emily until 4 months after she re-met Joe, which the timing doesn't line up by at least a year on that. So there's other clues too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask you guys some questions before we start going into some of the book club, the book club questions. This is just saying like how well written you think the book is. So the first question is, how well written do you feel the book was, 10 being the best, 1 being the worst? And we'll just go in the same order, Dawn, Rebecca, Amber.
3.
I'll give it a 4.
I'm going to go with my original gut response, which I feel sheepishly saying, I was going to say a 6.
I would give it a 6 as well. So what was your initial response to the book as far as 1 being it was the worst book you ever read and 10 being it was the greatest thing that you've ever read?
Okay, initial response was a 2. That was my initial response.
Also a 2 for me. I gave it a 4 earlier because like the sentence level is great. Story structure is not, and that's what my gut instinct is on, so 2.
Initial was a 5, but after this conversation, it's going down.
So my number would have been a 4. I would say it was a little bit below average for me. So that's why. All right. So the next question is, how would you rate her style of writing? 10, of course, being you loved it. 0 being you hated it.
So style of writing on the sentence and paragraph level, 7. Style as far as story structure and character arcs go, 2.
I would agree with the 7. I thought it was very well written. I would probably give it about a 4.
I guess I would rate it about a 5. I was going to give it a 7 as well because her descriptors are very fantastic. But it could have been more engaging.
I give it a 7 as well. Her descriptors are fantastic. She's a great describer. She can paint a picture. It's great.
All right. So this time we're going to start with Becca. How engaging would you say the book was? 10 being very engaging, 0 being awful.
I apologize, but I can't just give a number on this. I'm going to say 5 because I did feel compelled to keep reading, but it was from pure confusion. So 5.
So I'm going to say 7, and I have to ask the room. I mean, I feel like I've been reading a little bit more of this, which is outside of my norm. Like I read Lessons in Chemistry, which is again, outside of my norm. I don't know, because of the darkness what I work with, I feel like I've been enjoying the lighter reads. So I have been enjoying this. There are a few quotes I even picked out that I was like, oh, I connect to this. So you know what? I enjoyed the lightness. I enjoyed the palate cleanser. I would say 7.
So for me, I would say the beginning was a 2 because of what she did to her best friend and feeling like it never got redeemed. And as I was reading, I started to get more into it. So then I would give it a 7 as I got more towards the middle, but I still had high hopes. But I guess when everything was said and done, I would give it a 5 overall.
I'm going to rate this really low. Maybe I'm too critical, but I only read it because I love you, Agnes. That's it. I would not have finished this book. I would have thought, oh, this is just a waste of my time. And I would have put it down. Not that it was, that all of it was horrible, but truthfully, I would not have finished it if it wasn't for this book club.
All right. So now we're going to start with Amber. How sticky would you say the book was? The 10 being that it will stick with you forever. You will never forget these characters. 0 being, oh, you forgot about them as you were reading.
Sorry, I'm going to pull a Rebecca on this. I can't just, I'm going to say 0 because there, but I'm going to say that I'm going to give it a number about a 3 or 4 when it comes to connection and thinking about me being in theater and thinking about a quote or two that I really felt deeply that she said, but character wise, they weren't dynamic. They were very static. So 0. I know that's rough. Actually, that's the lowest number we've given so far, but no, when I closed the book, I was checked out.
Yeah. So for me, I probably would give it a 1 because I mean, the whole reason that why I like a book is because of the characters, and the characters just didn't stick with me. I didn't relate to any of them. And if I did, I was turned off by them. So yeah, I just, maybe I'll be generous and give it a 2.
I would give it a 2 because I would remember how much I didn't want to read it again. I don't know how you guys got through it 2 and 3. Like, I could not have done it. It just was just that. I know this sounds terrible, but I just had this really emotional ick response to this book. I just ick. And I just couldn't have. I'll be like, I told Larry, I was like, yeah, time to start a bonfire. We're not going to subject anyone else to this book.
And Marie, I've been in your shoes. I actually, maybe when we're with this conversation, I want to tell you the book that did it to me, because it's also like everybody loves it, talks about it all the time. And I'll tell you after this conversation.
Okay.
Well, I'm not far off. I read it multiple times because that's my job. That's my pattern. I will remember it because I read it 3 times and took notes on it. If I was reading casually, 0, absolute 0. Mm.
All right, so Amber, we're going to start with you again. How relatable were the characters? 10 being great, 0 not at all.
Great question. I feel like for as underdeveloped as they were, I would say the characters were, their actions, I would say were not, listen, I've never cheated on a significant other. This is recorded, so you can show my husband. But I think the characters in their actions were relatable. So I would say maybe a 6 or 7. You know, Emily was being a little bit more manic because of the pandemic and, you know, doing anything to enhance your career. So action wise, I'm not sure with follow up, I'm not sure with character growth, but action wise, I'm giving it a little bit of a caveat. I would say relatability would be like a 6 or a 7.
So I couldn't relate to Lara at all, mm-hmm. just at all, but I really, really related to Joe. Having grown up on a farm and having a farm family, there's a whole different kind of, I mean, my family farmed back 8 or 9 generations. And there's a whole different level of, we belong to the land. So I found Joe very relatable. And I really found Sebastian relatable too. He was just a sincerely decent guy. So I would say I give it like a 3. I mean, Joe and Sebastian would be like 7 or 8. Everybody else, even the girls, like I can relate a little bit to Nell, but everybody else would be like 1 or 2. And Ripley's pretty decent too.
So I will only speak to the two main characters being Laura and Duke. Relatable to who I am, Rebecca, me. Yeah, like a two. But realism, this is the highest score I'm going to give them. I'm giving them a solid 8. I think that they were very realistic characters, not for me, but for people that I've met, people that I've interacted with.
I would totally agree with that. Before we get into the book club questions, I wanted to ask what your rating would be if you were to rate it on Goodreads or Amazon. So 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 stars. And this time we'll start with Dawn.
One. Partly because you could tell that she had done a lot of research about Michigan, but she hadn't really spent very much time here. Amber, you're from Pittsburgh. Rebecca, where are you from?
Originally from rural Nevada, now living in Maine.
Okay. So.
But Marie, my husband's from Petoskey and we come up a couple times a year. Are you in Michigan?
Yes.
So am I.
Yes, I am.
Oh, I know. Where are you guys? Yeah. Where are you guys?
We both actually live south of Grand Rapids.
Oh, yes. Oh, gosh. Okay.
So the thing that got me was the cherry picking. Amber, have you ever gone cherry picking?
I haven't, but I have been to the cherry festival at Traverse City, if that counts.
Okay.
But I would, so, but I would love to.
Even though I grew up in Nebraska, Nebraska gets cold enough that we raised cherries on the farm I grew up on. We had 3 big cherry trees. And cherry picking is so messy. You come back from cherry picking, your hands are purple. You've probably got something on your face. It's all over your clothes. It's all over your shoes. You only wear things to pick cherries that are literal rags or that are completely dark or that you never want to wear ever again because it stains horribly. Horribly. So here we have this mother and her daughters, and the one daughter is wearing this heirloom dress that her great-grandmother made for her mom, and it's white daisies to go pick the fruit that stains almost as bad as anything in the world. And then they lay on the ground under the cherry tree, which would stain you from the heels of your feet to your hair, because like birds and stuff will eat half a cherry and then it'll drop from the tree. The ground is covered with half rotten cherries by the time it's time to harvest cherries. It is a messy disaster. Disaster. And so I was like, somebody needed to go cherry picking before she finished the book, because there is nothing about it where you would want to wear a sundress. Okay. The other thing too is like, she got the highways mixed up. The main highways in Western Michigan. You saw it too, Agnes? The main highways in West Michigan, the north and south one is 131. The east and west one is 196. And she said, oh, she headed north on 196. No, 196 does not go to Traverse City. It's a completely different highway that is 100 miles from Traverse City. It's ridiculous. But it was like, there were so many things that she obviously did her research on, and so many things that she simply still had no clue on. I do agree with hating goats, though. I had goats when I was a kid. You too. Goats are terrible.
What about you, Rebecca?
I'd give it a 3. It wasn't for me, and it wasn't for people who have the same taste in literature that I do. But I can absolutely see the value that it has for people who like the low to almost no stakes, very pretty poetic sentences kind of writing. So I'd give it a 3.
I'm going to have to agree with Rebecca on this. I gave it a 3 on Goodreads because I know who follows me on Goodreads and I know what they like to read. And they like to read this kind of stuff. Did anyone read the author's note? Okay, so in the author's note, can I read it really quickly? It's super short.
Sure.
I thank Thornton Wilder, who wrote the play that has been an enduring comfort, guide, and inspiration throughout my life. If this novel has a goal, it is to turn the reader back to our town and to all of Wilder's work. Therein lies the joy. So I feel like that's another reason. And I, again, a theater kid, I have seen Our Town. I have read it. I've never been in it. I could sing, I couldn't act or dance. It's the only reason I got parts. But she had a goal and she knew what she wanted. And I feel like I know what my, again, the people that follow me on Goodreads. So I gave it a 3. It's a good fluff read. My mom's going to Vegas for Easter, not going to be with her family. So I'm giving her Tom Lake. I'm like, here, mom, this is easy. You won't be sad missing us. Here you go. So I gave it a 3.
So I kept debating because I don't normally post if I'm going to give them lower a 3 or lower, but I would have probably given it a 3 if I were to post it. But I don't like to affect their scores, especially if they're indie authors, but this is bestseller. So maybe I should just tell people, you know, this is a 3. So one of the book club questions that I had crossed was, how did you like it being set in the pandemic era of fiction?
Captured the solitude of it really well. And she also seemed to understand that a farmer's life is very tied to whether or not you can get the crops in. Very much so. And having to do that on your own, and a little bit of a sense of panic that brings, that it had to have brought to a lot of farmers and a lot of people that rely on a ton of help to bring their crops in, like their family did. That had to have been panic time for these families. So I think that sense of solitude and showing it from the perspective of farmers who rely on hired help to keep their farm going, and that was just suddenly not there anymore. I liked that aspect of it.
So I have several very specific feelings about that exact topic. The first was, I think the zeitgeist of that is part of what helped it get popularity and take off how it did. And I've complimented the realism several times. And I think that mentioning and including the aspects of the pandemic that impacted these people and their life was beautifully presented. However, I feel like if you're going to introduce an element like that, it should have impact. And this is something that I most often take issue with in fantasy. Like, okay, if you're going to introduce some world building, there has to be a reason for it. And I very much feel that around having mentions of the pandemic in this particular story, it didn't influence any character choices necessarily, anything that really impacted the plot or the character development or lack thereof. And that's just like, that's the main reason why I don't feel great about it, is that it just didn't do anything for the story.
Truthfully, so, you could have done the whole thing without
exactly
the pandemic.
If you like, they were home for a weekend.
Yeah. Right. If you can take it out, right, and the core story doesn't change, it shouldn't be in there.
So it's funny because, and Marie, I didn't, and Rebecca, I didn't grow up on a farm. So I kind of had the exact opposite feeling. I thought, wow, the pandemic brought their kids home. Their kids can help. This is so wonderful. Like, so it's interesting to hear, you know, that it was the exact opposite perspective, which in hindsight, that does make sense. I would agree with Becca that I haven't really read a lot of books that have touched on the pandemic, but right, like, for me, I wish that Emily would have been more developed. Not saying I want to read about somebody's misfortunes or somebody's mental illness, but there was so much there. And Emily even spoke about herself. And Laura, you know, alluded to Emily just having so many like hardships when she was younger. This could have really added to her character development. What happened to her during the pandemic? Is the pandemic the reason she doesn't want children? What's going, yeah, I agree. I think the kids could have just been home for a weekend celebrating maybe their parents' anniversary. And they said, tell us the story of Duke. I completely agree with you. It didn't play the role that it should have played in the book. It could have done so much more for the character development.
Even if it didn't do much, if it did something,
right,
I could feel a lot better about it being in there.
I agree.
For me, that was kind of the same thing, as I felt like she didn't explore it enough. And And that's what I kept waiting because I knew what it was before I even opened it, because I was one of the first things I noticed. And I kept waiting for it to be developed. And I feel like somebody 20 years from now might not even pick up that it was during the pandemic. And certain things, certain comments might not make sense to them. So they'll just be like, oh, whatever. And like you said, like, if you took out that it was in the pandemic, it wouldn't really change the story. So it wasn't actually important to the integral part of the story. So what were your guys' thoughts about the relationship with Duke? Or even just the character Duke?
Very, very toxic in so many ways. But there was also like, there was buildup, especially in the early Tom Lake scenes that were described, where it was pretty classic romance. They had a meet cute. He was so respectful of her when they first meet in her room. And then he just turned into a villain. And even the last described interaction with him is like the height of his villainy. I was not a fan at all. I don't think it worked for me at all as a romance or as a driving factor or as a connectable character or anything like that.
And you're telling me nothing else in life happened to him that he still wanted to be buried there? And then Sebastian came. It was just like, are you kidding? I don't know. It didn't work for me. I didn't get like the, oh my gosh. It just, you wanted to tie it up with the boat quickly. I don't know. And that, what he did to her, that was devastating. The hospital, that was devastating. But yet you loved this farm so much and you loved this cherry orchard and you want to be buried there. I don't know. He was nothing to me. He was nobody. He wasn't developed enough for me to even care. I have to be honest with you. It just wasn't there enough. I didn't get invested.
So like at first I was definitely rooting for him and I was curious like what caused her to stray from Duke and end up with Joe. But then again, I think the cheating thing is like just too much for me for many reasons. I lost all respect for him as a character once he did the cheating thing because there was really no redemption after that for me. I don't know. I just didn't really like Duke. I didn't really quite understand the fascination with him. He didn't come across great to me, even from the very beginning.
I agree. And here we're finding out. Okay, so he meets her, and the same day he meets her, he basically moves into her room.
Yeah.
On the same day that he meets her. And just kind of takes over her life. Like, oh, you need to start smoking. Oh, we're going to go do this. And then pushing her to drink when she didn't want to during rehearsals. That's a massive red flag. Massive. It left such a horrible taste in my mouth. I didn't like Duke at all. I liked him for 10 minutes. And then I read a little further and I went, oh, just ew. Ick. And then not only was he not redeemed at all, like you hope that he's going to be a redeemed character when he comes to the farm and she's pregnant with Nell and he picks up Emily. You hope that. And then you find out what he did when he was in the psychiatric hospital.
Yeah.
And you're just like, this man had her go through all of these hoops to get there, didn't even put a real name on the list. And the only reason he wants her to show up is for a booty call.
Why do you even let him in?
I don't even understand. Like, why did she even agree to this?
That's my biggest issue with her.
Absolutely agree. It's like, honey, have you no self-respect? Mm-hmm. Have you no dignity at all? And like none whatsoever. Tell the boy no.
And it could have been a moment of growth for her. But no.
Exactly. Where she just said, it could have been the closure for her where she said, I'm not going to kiss your hiney anymore.
Do you know what I was really waiting for? Excuse me for jumping in. I was waiting for the last part of the book for her to be like, here's what really happened. And her to say the whole beginning of the book was a farce. This was all for me just to get the girls off my back. Here's what really, and then we really got character development and we really heard how horrible it was and blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, we got the grandmother's story, which was just as beautiful, a little fairy tale. And we find out how Nell gets her name. And don't get me wrong, I loved finding out how the girls got their names. So cute. But that's what I was kind of waiting for. I was kind of waiting for her to be like, none of this was true. This is what we do as mothers to protect our children. Here's the real story. That's what I was waiting for. So, because I agree with you, that would have been like, that would have been some character growth.
Right, completely. And then here these girls are hearing these horrible things and still all they want is to hear about Duke. Mm. And it's like, who so are you people? Go ahead.
So one of the things that I watch for in dev editing is what, like, I try to pull out what I think the author was going for like a theme or a double factor problem or whatever you want to call it, whether or not they knew that's what they were going for. And the best that I can pull out for this story, given everything we've just named that is very, very wrong with Duke and the romance with him and all of that stuff, is something along the lines of, you know, is it better to chase fame and the hot famous guy, or is it better to settle with stability and comfort and, you know, the more sort of, I don't really want to say healthy love because it could go either way, but I feel like there's something in that dichotomy that the author set up between Duke and Joe, and that she really wanted to hammer home the point that Laura made the right choice going with Joe, but then didn't actually deliver on letting the reader see that choice get made and the reasons behind it and, you know, the best bad choice or the irreconcilable good decision. Like, she wanted to hit you over the head with Laura picked Joe over Duke and that was the right choice, but didn't show that.
Shouldn't the, like, she was in a movie and on love, shouldn't that have been more of like the focal point than a little thing at Tom Lake? Don't get me wrong. I mean, really, but I mean, the one quote I keep telling you guys, there was a quote that really hit home with me. And it, one of the, and I can't remember it verbatim, but it was, she said, I was so lucky. I lived this amazing, crazy, chaotic life. And now I'm living this very wonderful life. And I've had both opportunities and now I'm satisfied. And then Joe is like, me too. And that's so beautiful. And God bless anybody that feels that way. I think that is so beautiful. But I agree with you, Becca. Like, they don't really hit, they don't talk about that enough to show the stark contrast. Yeah. It's just not developed enough. I know I keep using that word. I can't think of a better one.
You're right. I wanted to hear how she and Joe fell in love. Yeah. And they completely skipped over it. Oh, we dated for a while and then we just decided to get married. You know, just treading our way down the, you know, down to marriage.
How about Ripley? How about that really quick, like, Ripley was in love with you? Like, Ripley wasn't, like,
yeah. No purpose. None whatsoever.
It, like, a romance reader. How dare she? How dare she?
And Sebastian brought that up. Like, what? What's happening here?
But to have her talk about how, why she thinks that she made the absolute right choice. We don't even go into it.
Great point. That's,
yeah, she just says, like, I have this quote here, good marriages are never as interesting as bad affairs. And that's as close as she gets to an explanation.
For any writers listening, this is a great example of show versus tell. She has told us that Joe is the right choice. We all wanted to see her show us that.
I think I might have ended, I think that might have redeemed the book for me.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? If she had told how he was patient with her, because he alludes to the fact that he didn't want to scare her off, but she never says a single word about it. And I'm going to just dip a tiny bit into my own experience. When I was young, I was a looker and I had no shortage of men who had one reason to show me attention. Okay. But my husband, the first time we met, I was in a clean room. I had a mask on my face. My hair was up in a net. I had on a straight down gown, booties on my feet, safety goggles. He could not see what I looked like. And he told me later that after we talked for a few minutes, he walked out of that clean room and said, I'm going to marry that girl. He didn't even know what I looked like for 3 or 4 days. And then he was like, oh, she's actually kind of pretty. And then later, he would help me with something, help me fix my car, help me move. And I'd say, why are you helping me? And instead of doing what other guys would do and say, well, I kind of like you and I'd really like to date, in which case I would say, I am not interested. He would say to me, you're my friend. And I know what it's like to be alone. And I don't want anyone, any of my friends, to feel the way that I felt when I had no one. That's why I help you. He gave me zero pressure. Based on how Duke pressured her into everything. Moved into her room the first day. Here, take a drag on a cigarette. Nope, you got a drink. Come on, let's not go to breakfast. Let's, you know, get busy. All of those things. Push, 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 push. The contrast with Joe would have been a sigh of relief.
Yeah, and I feel like Dawn and Amber, you've both brought up some great points, specifically about how the author set up for so many different options. She had so many options. I've got a dozen more in my head of where it could have gone, or a twist that she could have just dropped in there. There were so many options because her realism is so good, because she is so grounded in the worlds, whether or not she portrayed them entirely accurately. Like there were so many directions that the story could have had some moment in that last third or so where you went, oh, it was all worth it. It just never happened.
Never happened. No payoff.
So I didn't feel like she developed any part really well, but we're just going to wrap it up here. I did want to ask one more question from each of you and hear what your guys' takeaway from the book is. Good, bad, whatever, whatever just comes to mind. There is no right or wrong answer. Just share your takeaway from this particular book. So let's go in reverse order this time. So we'll start with Amber.
I hate to use this verbiage, but I will. It was fluff for me, but I enjoy fluff. I like to just read a book and my mind just goes to the story. I'm not thinking about anything else. It's kind of like being on stage. You don't think about anything else. You're reading the story. You're maybe not too immersed. You're not too involved. You're not too empathetic. You're just reading the story. I loved, though, that I was also reading the story to talk to you ladies about it. That I love that. I love when I have a reason also. Sometimes when think about when you have your different purposes for reading a book. When I knew I was going to discuss it, sometimes I just read it and the ideas come. So I did enjoy reading it. I really enjoyed speaking to everybody tonight. Could have gone for another hour, but I'm sure nobody wants to listen to me. I don't even know what the original question was, but I did enjoy the process, mostly because I knew we were speaking of it. If I was just reading it for whatever, I don't know if I would have finished. I have to be honest. Rough. But I'm glad I read it. I'm glad we had this conversation. And I love being in, you know, the presence of all of these writers.
I think my biggest takeaway from this story is that if a story doesn't deliver an impact, be that like an emotional impact of you leave it feeling really just in love with humanity or terrified of climate change or something, or it can be a big twist of, oh, I can't believe it. That was perfect. I didn't see it coming, but once it was there, I'm never going to forget how they set that up. If the story doesn't deliver an impact, then all of the beautiful descriptions and poetic sentences and multi-layered stories within stories within stories are worthless. If you don't have the skeleton, the flesh doesn't matter.
I love it. There's a beautiful descriptor right there. I love that description. I think that the thing that I thought when I concluded the book was, wow, Laura's just surrounded by some awful people. I mean, really. She wasn't a particularly wonderful person either. But through this whole story, here she's telling this story, and there's just all these awful people around her. And I can understand why she was just really, why it ended up being such a negative experience for her. Because she allowed all these awful people to direct her life. I think that's the thing that gets me about all this, is that she was so hungry for a director in her life that she allowed, not only did she throw herself into the play, okay, but all the people around her were making all the decisions for her too. She ended up marrying the director. Okay.
This is an excellent point.
She had no direction of her own. She had no calling, no direction of her own. Everything that she did was something someone else decided for her because she needed to be directed. And I think that
mother sending her to her grandmother's.
Yes, yes. All her decisions were made for her by other people, except possibly one, if you say her, you know, ending her career. But I think it was just a self-preservation reaction to trauma at that point.
And ending her pregnancy.
Yes, yes, that is true. But everything else, it's like that is the only choice that she took any responsibility for. Joe was the one who decided they lived on the farm. Okay. Duke and decided even, all this other stuff for her.
And even ending her career.
Yeah.
Wasn't a choice she made. That was a choice made by the arena when she broke her leg.
Also, like, you broke your leg. You really have to stop being an actress? I don't know. That just all felt a little like.
Still, it bugs me that there was no moment where she had total choice and was aware of the choices that she had and then made them. Everything from you know, getting her tendon snapped through them cheating on her in front of her to Sebastian leaving her in that theater, it was all outside sources, like Marie was just saying, that stacked up on her until she was forced to make a choice. It didn't come from a place of agency.
And the hard part is that she could have made choices from a place of agency. She could have done that all along. But even when she was 16, she was letting this boy decide how she treated her best friend.
Yeah.
You know, she was letting Ripley make all these decisions about her life. She was letting Duke just tromp right over her.
And she was and doing I think it so flippantly. She didn't have a reaction. She just said, hey, this is what I did. It was just so casual.
She and think about the teaching moment that could have been for her daughters, where she yes. would say, listen, you as women have this opportunity. Even when you think you have no choice, you really do. Instead, other people directed her life.
So can I ask this question? I apologize. What do we think was, why? What was she teaching her daughters? Not what we think. What was the message from the book? What was the lesson she was teaching her daughters? To take the simple life? What was the lesson?
I don't think she had a lesson for her daughters.
I agree. I
think that her daughters. Yeah, I think this was another area where she took no agency.
Yeah.
And she just let her daughters bully her into telling them this story that she didn't really want to tell. I have four daughters. If any of my daughters came to me and said, Mom, tell me all about your exploits with your ex-boyfriends, I would tell them to kick rocks. I am not going to talk about that with you. It is none of your business. Mm-hmm. You know?
So I think that was one of the things that really bothered me. Is because I even have an adult daughter. I have three younger daughters, and every conversation I have, especially with the younger daughters, is, and I know these are about older daughters, is to make sure that what I'm sharing actually has a message. And I think you do that, especially when you're writing a story, is you want to make sure that what you're sharing is having a message. And I don't feel like what she shared with her daughters really gave a message. And you know, this would have been like the perfect opportunity for her to share this with her adult daughters. And I kind of get the whole like wanting to connect with them and share a story that they would really like. But I also just feel that, you know, you talk to your daughter slightly different than you would talk to like your best friend. I think I got to remember that like she didn't actually share the sexual things. She just referenced to them. So I guess maybe I'm being a little bit too harsh there.
I just wanted to talk.
Go ahead. I was going to ask you a question, Angie. Do you think that the pandemic played any role in that? Do you think that there's no indication in the book if she had any other friends really at all that she would have talked to about anything. Do you think that having them all there and kind of cooped up might have changed what she was willing to share?
Yeah, I guess it might have. I didn't really think about it that way, but it kind of seemed like a story that she was going to be sharing with them anyway. So I think at some point it probably would have come up anyway.
They used his death in the news as sort of the inciting incident to get her telling the story. But yeah, I agree with everything you
guys. I mean,
let's
all put this into perspective. Like if our mothers had an affair with Sean Connery, I'm trying to think of like somebody like her mother's age, wouldn't we be asking the same questions? I mean, I don't know if I would have had a little nervous breakdown and been like, I'm definitely Sean Connery's daughter. But I mean, I did try to put myself in that space to try to think, how would I have handled that? And would I want to know the stories? And
that's
making it seem like it is, you know, has a tint of realism.
That's part of why I don't entirely agree with the take that it's a bad relationship with her daughters, because
I agree.
I have the kind of mom who would tell that story, and I would
enjoy
my sister, and that's just how we function. But yeah, I don't know. It's, yeah.
See, I thought she was pretty tame with her story, especially leaving some things out. The girls are a certain age, you know, they're still pretty young. I'm obviously older. I think if I, you know, my mom would share certain things with me, but yeah, that part didn't bother me. What bothered me was that, I agree with Marie, there was just no takeaway. This is just what happened. And then Sebastian showed up.
Yeah. I think that, and I tend to be the kind of mother that overshares, you know, I would rather, like my family talked about nothing ever. Right. So there are times when my girls are even like, seriously, mom, we did not need to know that. Even still, I would never have gone into that kind of detail. You know what I'm saying? Or spent so much time just tearing it all into teeny tiny little pieces to feed to my kids. You know what I'm saying? It would be like, okay, so this is kind of what happened, and they get the whole story in a single afternoon, and then it would be done. But just the amount of detail that, as a mother, she's telling them.
But she's doing it for a reason. She's giving all of those details, but again, she misses the mark. Why?
Yeah, I think that's why I have a big problem with it, because there's really no reason for her to share it. She didn't give them like a lesson. I don't know. So she just started sharing stuff, and there was really no direction for it or any teachable moments. That's what I think I would have wanted to do when I was sharing. I do have to remember that these girls are a little older even than my adult daughter, but I usually, when I'm trying to talk to them about things, I usually try, especially about my past, I want to try to teach them something in that moment. You know, that's just how I function, and we're all different.
Put that in different wording in case it helps any of the listeners. If you're using a framing device, like a mother telling a story to her daughters, or there's a book called The Name of the Rose or something like that, where it's a novice trying to pass on this story to help a newer novice navigate their world. If you're using a framing device, the device itself has to serve function, which is what you guys were all just saying. I just wanted to put it in a different wording.
Thank you guys so much. I really appreciate this. Went way better than I possibly imagined it. And I can't wait to do more. From this point forward, we're going to be starting to interview some of my authors next week. Or excuse me, next month, we're going to be interviewing Shel Cypress, who is the author of Unmasking the Curse. So feel free to start reading that so you can hear the spoilers in there. I also did interview her in the past, so you can listen to that if you want to listen to it prior to finishing the book. But hopefully you guys will enjoy the little journey that we're going to be on as we interview some of my self-published authors. I guess some of them will be traditional published as well. And then every so often, we'll have to talk about a bestseller and why we think it's a bestseller and whether we think it should be or not. Thank you again, guys. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of Authors Alcove. We will be back next week on Wednesday, where we will have a writer share yet another piece of work. Also, every other Tuesday, we do learn from experts such as editors, marketing execs, book cover artists, illustrators, and more. If you are interested in being a guest on our show, feel free to go to authorsalcove.com, go to the podcast tab, and then click on Be a Guest. If you're looking for a healed heart, hop on over to our sister podcast, Strength, Love, and Healing with Authors Alcove. You can find that on Spotify and the Apple Podcast. Thank you so much for listening today. Have a great day.